Doug Vaughn here to tell you about Bertarelli Cutlery. Now, I'm best known for two things, spitting red-hot sports takes and legendary culinary skills in the kitchen. I've been going to Bertarelli for all my kitchen tools for years. They have it all, knives, pots, pans, mixers, meat slicers, and all the gadgets and gizmos you could ever imagine. Bring in a set of knives with Bertarelli Cutlery's knife sharpening service, and in 30 minutes, your blades will be better than new. So shoot on down to Bertarelli Cutlery on the Hill or shop online at BertarelliCutlery.com.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
It's Ryan Kelly Morning After, 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. Tim McKernan, Doug Vaughn with you on the program. The cat had to bolt for winter warm-up responsibilities. We're broadcasting live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Stream the program, stream the podcasts on Gateway Buick GMC's app. And I'm telling you, if you haven't listened to the Swopes picks, I would recommend doing that. Lot of discussion on that and on the tickets for Ryan Kelly versus Timberfake going on sale 1 hour and 2 minutes ago. Doug, we already have sold 200 plus tickets.
200 plus. And yeah. You said the place holds how many again?
We are working on expanding, so I don't want to give a full number. But
was 200 close to capacity,
no,
at least?
No, it's not.
So plenty of tickets still available.
No, more than half the tickets are available, more than half the tickets are sold because we've set aside some for staff and sponsors and Ryan Kelly and Timberfake. But if you want to get in there, you can get them right now at InsideSTL.com on the TMA fan page and on Twitter. Click on that link. It'll take you to Eventbrite. It's $50 a ticket, and all the ticket revenue goes to Catherine Cares, Three Little Birds for Life, and Friends of Kids with Cancer. Because of the weather issues last week, we didn't get a chance, and the Blues being on the West Coast, we didn't get a chance to talk to Kelly Chase, but we do get to talk to him twice this week, presented by Petromart.
Hey, Blues fans, it's time to drop your gloves and face off on the St. Louis Blues Report with Kelly Chase. Fueled by Petromart, a proud sponsor of your St. Louis Blues. Now, here's Chaser.
And joining us right now to talk about a great weekend for the Blues, ladies and gentlemen, Kelly Chase, presented by Petromart. Morning, Chaser.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Very good. Man, you go into the weekend after that game against the Kings, the way things have been going.
I lost you there.
Can you hear us, Chaser?
Can you hear us now? Now can you hear us? Can you hear us now? Can you hear me now? How can you hear? Can you hear me now? Now do you hear me? How about now? Do you hear me well? Do you hear me not at all? Hello.
All right, I'll put him on hold, and then the Sea Monster can reconnect with Kelly Chase. But as we were discussing, and here's Ken Hitchcock talking about it, you know, what he's getting from his team this weekend, he was very impressed, especially considering where things were as they headed to San Jose on Saturday.
You know, today wasn't clean. We made some tired mistakes. They made some tired mistakes, but we're competing at a much higher level, and it's allowing us a chance to win games. And, you know, when you're competing at a high level, you keep the scoring chances down, you keep the shots on goal down. You confront every scoring opportunity, and that's what we're doing. So we're looking like a team that wants to pay the price to win hockey games right now.
Those are two great wins. Both those teams are outstanding at home. And considering how things had looked going in after the loss at the Staples Center on Thursday night, to get those wins and to do it in the fashion that they did with Carter Hutton, Doug, a little eye-opening.
The first win in Anaheim since 2009. They've been 0-9-1 in their last 10 games there. That's hard to believe that any team could dominate you that to that degree, but they have been. Ducks have been a pretty good team. I don't know what got him turned around. Sometimes the game to me at times seems so random with the bounces of the puck and everything that sometimes I think maybe it gets overanalyzed and we didn't have the buy-in, we didn't have the want-to, and then the next night you get the bounce and you did have the buy-in.
Right.
There's got to be something to that, but they have certainly played a lot better these last two nights.
Carter Hutton in net for both those nights. Only the second time in his career he started back-to-back nights. Here is what he had to say on a huge save he made on a breakaway last night.
Jake and I talked a little bit after the game yesterday and then today, just something I'm trying to work on, just trying to stay more compact. I think sometimes if I get a little too open, that's kind of where I'm not as effective in playing to my post, being as compact, keep my feet under me and staying up as long as possible. So, you know, the play comes over, I stay on my feet, and then from there I can kind of explode into the puck. You know, I think I'm a lot, that's my strength is, you know, my feet work. So just kind of use it to my advantage, and obviously it paid off there.
I've never heard a goalie say he needed to explode into the puck.
I like that. He sounds like a broadcaster, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He talks real fast. Good personality. And now he's exploding into the puck.
Probably couldn't hack it on this show, though.
Oh, I wouldn't think so. No. No. Whoa. Slow down. I don't think he'd want to necessarily.
When you're starting in the NHL, as it seems like he may be.
Yeah.
Kelly Chase joins us right now. Morning, Chaser. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. But anyway, man, I'm telling you, going into the weekend, it looked like that could be dire circumstances considering back-to-back nights against those two teams, the issues in goal, and then look what happens. Carter Hutton, back-to-back nights, and the boys respond and pick up 4 points against two teams that have been outstanding in their own buildings.
Well, you're absolutely right. I think the key was, I think, timely saves and then the ability to work through things because, you know, you're right. I think if you could have easily came away from this game, especially after the LA game, and said, there's a chance of them getting nothing in this. Both Anaheim and San Jose are tough opponents. I think both of them structured, especially Anaheim last night, structured for playoff hockey. I talked to Randy Carlyle last night, the coach of the Ducks, and he said, you know, we're going through some inexperienced stuff with some of our guys, but he said in order to get in under the salary cap, we have to, you know, go through some of these challenges with them. But he said, I really like our team. He said, listen, we compete hard and we're physical. And he said, and I'd like to add some more of that. But he said, it's a matter of, you know, the cap and us understanding those things. He said, but tonight was a man's game. And he said, St. Louis, you got to give him credit. Back-to-back nights, as were the Ducks, you know, they came in and really pushed the pace.
As well as Hutton played in goal, how do you think Hitchcock handles the goalie situation now in the near future?
Well, I think they're, you know, Jake's certainly going to be, you know, the guy that's going to have the opportunities. I think that sometimes you got to get yourself, you know, some practice days to get some of the technical parts of your game sound. I think that's more, you know, whether they goaltenders call it mechanics or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes, but at least there's a sense of calmness about the fact that if Hutton goes in, much like they've had in the past with Elliott, that, you know, that he's capable of running with it. And this is a great opportunity for Carter Hutton, too. Remember, we've got an expansion draft coming up, as well as, you know, some teams that are shuffling around goaltenders right now trying to figure out how they're going to handle that. So for Carter, it might be an opportunity for him to earn, you know, a couple more years on a contract. So I give him credit. This is a great opportunity that he seized.
Do we lose Chaser again?
Hello?
Yeah, I got you guys.
Okay, and sorry.
There it is.
Sorry, we're just figuring out the phones. and Berglund has played much better here lately, too. That was a saucy little redirect he had for the basket bulger last night.
he has been very good. You know, I think one of the things that I envy about him is the fact that he said, you know, when things weren't going right for him, he got in the gym and really tried to push his workouts even harder. He said, you know, because I figured if I was going to get some chances and they weren't going in, if I got that much, you know, if I worked that much harder off the ice, I felt like, you know, they were going to go in, and lo and behold, he's got 10 now. So I think it was an empty netter that kind of got him off the schneid a little bit, and then, you know, got him his second goal, I believe, of the season. And since then, he's been fantastic, and he's been winning board battles, taking the puck to the net, and I think he's just been great. So for Patrick, I give him credit. He stuck with it, but more importantly, is he went to work a little bit harder off the ice, and And he had a good off season working out. You know, for him to go back at it and even put more effort in off the ice, I think speaks volumes about the professionalism.
Kelly Chase, our guest right now on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. He joins us at least once a week. This week it'll be twice. Presented by Petromart. Kelly Chase brought to you by Petromart here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Chaser, as far as the mindset of both goalies, because this is the topic in St. Louis, and I think the topic picks up even more steam after you see how Hutton played. What do you think the mindset of both guys is as you head into tomorrow night's game?
Well, I think what's good about Jake is that Jake puts stuff behind him pretty well. He's you know, he doesn't get high, he doesn't get low. He's not, you know, he's not the guy that doesn't talk to you on game day and, you know, worries about the little things that you know, some of the guys, you know, have that are issues. I think that sets him up well to get out of his funk. But I think he also knows that, hey, he's got to be better. He's you know, a guy that's heavily counted on, and I don't think the Blues can do more than continue to put him in there and put him in those situations to thrive. And at that point, he's going to have to pick up the success himself, much like we just talked about with Patrick Berglund, where it's, you know, how much harder am I going to have to work, and then go out and do it.
I bet there's an awful lot of pressure on a goaltender in a situation like Allen, when you're supposed to be the number one guy and you've got the contract and things haven't gone well and then you're on the bench. The next time he plays, it seems like there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to avoid that first early goal and go, uh-oh, here we go again.
I know it's not quite the same as, you know, when Cat leaves early and you got to pick up the slack, but that's what they're paid for.
Well, that's a nice analogy.
Oh, wow.
That's
wow.
A nice analogy.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like, it's that's tough. I guess that's why you are paid. That's why you have the extension. That's why we play the game. When you know, for me, it was, say, if we picked up somebody in a trade that might have been a minor deal that's a role player, or, you know, hey, they brought a couple extra, you know, tough guys to camp, you know, to make you uncomfortable, the guy scored, whatever. You just got to do what you do, and that's what you're paid to do. You got to go out and figure it out. And I think that's what Jake will do. He's a kid that is always, you know, like you said, he's always grabbed the bull by the horns and always wanted to be the guy that has been the number one guy. So there's your opportunity, and he'll figure it out.
And speaking of tough guys, Reeves got in a scrap last night. I guess that you'd call it a Pier 6 Donnybrook. How would you score that one?
I would score it. in nowadays scoring, I would have said that's about a... It's from the heavyweight standpoint, I give Jared Bull a lot of credit. That's about a 8 out of 10 with two, you know, from a size differential. Or, you know, they're both big guys, but they're tough guys. And I think the one thing about Ryan is he's never going to back down, but he's understanding sometimes, too, there's some life that has to be on the bench or some situations that have to be straightened out, and I think he's doing a better job of that. You know, if Ryan Reeves is not a guy that's one of the guys that's protected in the expansion draft, I believe that he'll end up being picked up. He's really made a difference on this team. He's improved his game a lot. He's a physical presence. Those guys are asked to do a lot of stuff that's not glitter and glamour. You know, initiating after goals scored against them, they go on the ice. After a goal for it, they go on the ice. And they always end up with a face-off down the other team's end. And then the guys that come, or the offensive guys, come out for kind of the, you know, for the candy. It's hard to get pucks out of your own end and not have a cycle and get it down and get a forecheck and constantly be on the move with physical play and still getting pucks at the net. They seem to do it for the other lines. The other lines benefit from the offensive zone faceoffs. So Ryan Reeves has been a big part of that.
Hey, Chaser, you got a couple of teams, really three teams this year, that have just gone on absurd tears. Two in the East, one going on right now with the Capitals having won 9 in a row. You saw what the Blue Jackets did earlier. And then one of them, unfortunately for the Blues in their division, Wild now in the midst of a 4-game streak, but of course had their monster streak earlier in the season. I don't recall an NHL season where we've seen streaks like this, especially considering we're only a little more than halfway through the season. Do you think that's flukish, or do you see a reason for it outside of those teams being a very good team?
No, I don't think it. No, I think it has been a while, but, you know, you used to see Colorado and Detroit,
yeah,
and those terrors. New Jersey was a team that would do that. But I can tell you that Minnesota Wild for me are the best team in the West. So if you're in, you know, you're in our conference, I watched them play twice. They play very fast. They're physical. The thing that makes Minnesota the most dangerous team for me in the West is their goaltending. Dubinsky's been, Dubnyk's been unbelievable this season. He's been good in the past, but he really seems to be focused right now. That allows them the luxury of some mistakes, but then they add Staal to the lineup. They got a little bit more depth, and they're still physical. I like the way they play the game. I think they're extremely tough to play against. And so, you know, because of that, I think they've caught some teams who in the past were like, well, you know, it looks like the same lineup with the exception of Staal as they played it before. Their systems changed a little bit with Boudreaux, and yet they still have a great pace to their game and they're physical. So to me, they're the best team. I know them and Chicago battled last night, and yet when I look at that team, I think that they have more depth now than they've ever had, and they're starting to show. Results are there. Scotty Stevens has done a great job with their defense. So those are teams that are certainly capable of putting long streaks together. When you talk about Washington, and Columbus maybe is a little bit fantastic goaltending, hardworking out of a group. That's the biggest turnaround. But a team like Washington, my gosh, their skill level is sickening. Their lines 1 through 3 can just destroy you at any time. And, of course, you know the puck's going to Ovi on the left side. He's a right-handed shot on the power play, and you can't do anything to stop it. It's almost like when Hull was firing pucks from different angles. He knew he was going to get in a spot. He was going to get a shot, and yet, you know, it seemed like once or twice a game he was going to score on you.
And how's Oshie doing with Washington now? And what do you think of that trade at this point that the Blues made Oshie for Brouwer?
Well, I think, Oshie's doing great, but I think the thing that's the tough part for probably Blues management and everybody is they didn't think they were going to lose Troy Brouwer. They should have probably tied him up a little earlier, and that was the hard part. Because Brouwer is probably one of the things missing from the Blues lineup that gave them that success last year. He's a very calming, he's a professional. He's got a calming effect around him, and I think the Blues felt like they would get Brouwer signed at all times, and when that didn't happen, you're kind of left out there with nobody, the two of them both gone. And in the era of salary caps, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, it seems like they could really use a scoring touch like Oshie, too. I guess what team couldn't?
Well, Oshie's a competitive kid, and his skill, is what makes him dynamic. I mean, look, he competes on pucks, certainly. He's always looks like he's falling down, or he is falling down and still making a play and going around guys and still competing on the puck. But I think the thing that's awesome about the way Oshie plays is that he's skilled enough to, to make, I guess, sometimes dynamic plays while falling down or while in the corner grinding on a puck and see the ice and still, play, with some man strength. And look, what team couldn't use a guy like that?
We saw you play with a lot of man strength in the alumni game, Sinister Twisted Wrister.
I hear that. Why do we have, now that you saw that, why do we have to drop the gloves with Kelly Chase? Why can't we just go down the wing, score like Kelly Chase?
Right. How about that? It's a good point.
Right.
Chaser.
He's a gifted offensive player.
Yeah.
As we look at the standings now, it looks like the Blues are playing for third place. Is that fair in the Central Division with Minnesota and Chicago putting some distance between the Blues?
I think you'd look at it more like they're trying to earn a playoff spot. I don't think there's any, I said this a month and a half ago. Some way Chicago and St. Louis will end up with each other, and I'm okay with that for a change. I don't mind that matchup, but because I think they've got rid of those demons last year, and now it's about competing. But on the flip side of it, you just want to get in the playoffs. We've seen teams that have won didn't have to be at the top of the conference, didn't have to win the President's Trophy. So I think that's what's important. And St. Louis is now one of those teams again that are, they want to get in and give themselves a run for knowing going into the playoffs you're playing the game the right way and having some confidence.
Kelly Chase with us, brought to you by Petromart. The Blues picking up all 4 points this weekend in San Jose and Anaheim. And Chaser with us, brought to you by Petromart once a week. This week, it's going to be twice a week, though. Chaser, thanks for getting up early and doing it with us, man. Appreciate it.
Happy to do it, guys.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
Kelly Chase, presented by Petromart.
That was your Blues Report with Kelly Chase, fueled by Petromart. Stop by your locally owned and operated Petromart location to register for your chance to win a 50th anniversary Bud Light Blues mirror, courtesy of Petromart. Start all your pregame festivities at Petromart, a proud sponsor of your St. Louis Blues and a proud supplier of Phillips 66 gasoline. Petromart, clean, fast, and friendly.
Kelly Chase with us on Monday this week, but he'll also be with us on Thursday coming up, and he is presented by Petromart. Blues winning last night 2-1 in overtime. Those are two really good wins. And for the next 28 hours, the Plowhawk will be the Plow Senator, Doug. Boy, when the Sens come to town.
Yeah, look out. Look out. Who do they have now? Alfredson?
Seems like he's been there ever since the franchise was founded.
Yeah. So I guess we're done talking about the Billikens win over George Mason?
I was going to get people ready for the game against the Bonnies.
Oh. First conference win.
Nice.
But they did get another All-State recruit last week.
So here they come. Let's look toward the future, and I'm not talking about the Bonnies game. I'm talking about...
Yeah, it's going to have to be a year or two down the...
Doug, less than 150 tickets now remaining to the Ryan Kelly bout.
Oh, jeez.
So if you want them... Ryan Kelly, Timber Fake, the fight, the battle on Broadway. Get them via InsideSTL.com. The link is up on the TMA fan page. I tweeted out the link. Get your tickets. It's presented by Bud Select. It is Friday, February 17th at South Broadway Athletic Club. $50 per ticket. Ticket revenue going to Three Little Birds for Life, Friends of Kids with Cancer, and Catherine Cares. There'll be five amateur bouts before the two Stormy Combatants get in the squared circle at around 10 p.m. And then after the strap is on the line, we head to DB's for an old-fashioned pony.
I hope that you've figured out your own entrance, that you'll be seated in some sort of throne and be carried in by four muscle men and sat down like in the front row.
I mean, publicly, I'm going to say, four of the hottest adult film stars are going to carry me in, but it'll be four hot guys.
I would think it would
And I'll be his jester, whether he wants, you know, an alcoholic beverage, a water, a snack of some kind.
And you should have a giant palm leaf that you could kind of keep him.
Oh, absolutely. Fresh. There'll be grapes
as
well.
Is that all right, or does that seem self-indulgent?
It doesn't to me, no.
Thank you.
A misting fan, you know, just in case it does get too humid and
if
hot.
If it's too hot in there for him, yeah. Is this okay, Timmy? That's what you should say.
Nice.
You want to water, Tim?
Nice. Doug, what about Le'Abi Tant's streak to start the season? You forgot that one.
Well, you're right about that. What, do they win 10 in a row?
Le'Abi Tant.
Yeah.
Le'Abi Tant.
Washington's won 9 in a row now. Or Columbus won 16 in a row, and they're not even leading their division.
Yeah, how about that? That's because Le Capital. You like that, Le Capital?
I don't really like that. They don't speak French in Washington.
Per Seth Wickersham on ESPN, the Chargers' desperation move is a shot to the NFL's vitality. How about that? Charger owner Dean Spanos rarely speaks at league meetings. Throughout drama of the past year, would the Chargers join the Rams at LA? Would they not? Spanos mostly deferred to team executives when the Chargers gave updates before fellow owners. Nobody blamed him. He felt like he'd been stabbed in the back last January when many owners assured him that he had the votes to build a stadium to be shared with the Raiders and Carson before the proposal went down in flames, aided by a last-minute alternative voted on in a secret ballot.
Yeah. Stabbed in the back. Well, if he
it's
felt
so like, asinine, I have to laugh.
If he felt like he'd been stabbed in the back, then it must have been that he had intended to move to Los Angeles all along anyway. If that's really where he wanted to be, then maybe I don't feel so sorry for him.
And so, but he did. They did try to get something done in San Diego for a long time. And so last month, it was striking that Spanos took the floor before owners at the league meetings at the Four Seasons in Irving, Texas, and it was not a good sign. Thank you, Spanos said, according to sources in the room. This has been a tough time for me and my family. He paused, then admitted what everyone already knew. Please keep it here. I don't want to go to L.A. I want to stay. How about this? Was this a last-minute plea for help? Was it a State of the Chargers address from the owner's mouth? Maybe it was something owners aren't used to hearing in meetings. Desperation. A beloved owner Spanos had first rights at moving to L.A. to be a tenant in the Rams' new stadium, a consolation prize after last year's contentious and spontaneous decision by owners. Spontaneous decision by owners to allow the Rams to move and to give the Chargers a year to decide whether they'd join them. A year had passed and not much had changed. Voters soundly rejected a local stadium referendum. In the meeting, Spanos told owners that fans were showing up at the Chargers practice facility and leaving $1 bills. Some owners quietly laughed, but most of the room was quiet. Who do you think was laughing? Steamer?
Jerry Jones would have been would have found that funny.
Steamer and Jones.
Steamer doesn't know how to laugh.
Hi, Frank. How you doing?
I don't think Steamer has ever laughed. You think he's ever laughed at anything? I'm not sure he's smart enough to find humor in anything.
It became clear why Spanos was speaking. He was telling them what Adam Schefter reported, that he was planning to move to L.A. It was sad and dire and unprecedented in Roger Goodell's decade as commissioner, an owner unwillingly moving a team to a city that doesn't seem to want it, sharing a stadium with an owner, Stan Kroenke, who doesn't want to split it, witnessed and engineered by a group of owners whose sympathy only goes so far. I have no choice, Spanos said. How about that?
And again, this is the same guy who wanted desperately to move to Los Angeles a year ago.
Huh?
If he could go with Oakland. That's what he really wanted, apparently. And now he's whining that he has to go to Los Angeles. In what will be a better stadium. Sharing it with another owner as he would have had to do with Oakland. So it's kind of hard to have sympathy with him, I suppose.
There will be plenty of blame to go around if three teams move in a matter of a year. But internally, owners and executives will wonder if NFL executive Eric Grubman, the point man on stadiums, did an effective enough job of negotiating with San Diego officials.
And the team that the LA fan base really seemed to want, it was the Raiders.
Yeah.
The one of the three that they didn't get.
The owners will be viewed as vessels of greed. I don't see that.
The vessels.
Spanos will be the one who in the end decided to pull the plug on a cherished home. His legacy is sunburned version of Art Modell's. But the lingering conflict goes beyond the relocations, beyond the logistics, and into an area that is tougher to navigate if not solve, because there is no clear solution. What if the NFL simply matters less? It's a question that goes beyond the ratings issue of 2016, a crisis that wasn't, but still shook some owners as a premonition that the league's cultural supremacy might be at stake. All stadium deals are different, and it's especially difficult to build one in California. But given the stakes, it was revealing that the Chargers' November stadium ballot measure went down so badly. The city had a choice, and it made it. Now L.A., which for two decades watched the weekend's two best games on TV, will watch the Rams and the Chargers. Owners publicly are bullish about L.A. as a two-team town. Privately, they're not so sure, especially because owners don't want the one team that would do best there, the Raiders, to return to their old home, owning to Al Davis's burned bridges and the co-opting of real apparel by gangs. How are the Chargers going to market themselves? One team executive says, we didn't want to be here, but we're here, so buy some PSLs.
Oh, yeah, they got to sell the PSLs too, don't they?
Yeah. They're going to play. Peter King said this morning, I don't think that they're going to be able to fill the 27,000-seat soccer stadium in Carson.
I hope not. I'm still dumbfounded. I guess I just don't understand engineering and construction at all. I don't understand why the Chargers couldn't have thrown in whatever they were willing to throw in, $200 or $300 million, and the league couldn't have thrown in the $300 million that they promised, and you take $500 or $600 million and improve the stadium where you are. You're telling me you couldn't do major improvements for $500 million to an existing stadium? What can't you fix for $500 million? The location? The location was okay.
And that's one of the things King was talking about, that the Chargers were just so committed to being downtown. But when I interviewed Kevin Faulkner, the mayor of San Diego last year, I guess in October or November 2015, he said if we propose downtown, then they'd say we want to be in Mission Valley, which is where Qualcomm is. So what is Qualcomm from downtown?
20 minutes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, why so he said it didn't matter what they wanted to do. They were just going to say the other thing.
Oh.
I don't know if that's true. That's the mayor telling me that, obviously.
So why would you care that much about being downtown as opposed to not being in the city at all? It's not downtown like a baseball team downtown where you got 81 home dates there and People are stopping and having, you know,
I agree
beer
with
and,
you.
And football, feel, I mean, you I, come I and be, you go.
The thing that makes an NFL game day experience so great and is the thing that we always lacked here. I mean, imagine what it would have been like, you know, 99 through 2003, say for the one bad year of 2002, if you would have had a venue similar to Arrowhead Stadium where you can hang out all day long. You just never had that in St. Louis. It was
no.
a choppy tailgate setup.
Right.
Very unique. Can you think of another city
without
like that?
A tailgate possibility?
Without a tailgate
Detroit's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Ford Field's kind of like that.
That's a good play.
Nothing else comes to mind immediately. But San Diego had that at Qualcomm.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand.
And they control all the parking there. They probably wouldn't downtown. You'd think that would be a significant revenue source.
Let's get the perspective of Howard Balzer. He joins us on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Morning, Howard.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. This Chargers to L.A. thing is an absolute debacle so far. What do you think?
Well, if you really think about it, this whole process really has been an absolute debacle. And just the way, from the league standpoint, from any other aspect of it, and as much as we here in St. Louis have been bitter and obviously about everything that happened, I think Dean Spanos has, in some sense, you know, been treated a lot, you know, treated worse. I mean, that's a partner, you know, that's an owner within the league, and I mean, what the heck? He had what he believed was a certain amount of support for the Carson project last year, and then who knows which owners turned on him, and they had to have a secret vote. So he wouldn't know.
Pretty much everybody turned on him.
Well, at the end of the day, they did. But in the first vote, you know, let's remember, the word was at the time that he had like 21 votes. And now, granted, that included him and the Raiders. So let's say for argument's sake, it was 19 owners that told him, hey, I'm for you, right? Well, in the first secret vote, when they decided to change everything, It flipped to around, as I recall, somewhere around 21, the exact opposite, around 21-11 for the Rams and Kroenke. So if all of a sudden there were only 11 voting for him, then that means there were 9 others that flipped. But you don't know which 9 it was because it was secret. And the NFL doesn't have secret votes. In fact, I've been telling people, I don't know if I ever told you guys this, the last secret vote they had in the NFL before this was in 1984 for a Super Bowl site when Leonard Toast, the owner of the Eagles, was trying to get a Super Bowl for Philadelphia, and basically no one wanted it, but he had enough votes to block the vote for Pasadena, which was the other site in the Rose Bowl, for the game. And, the, you know, believe it or not, guys, they had 17 ballots where they couldn't pick a Super Bowl until they finally said, okay, secret vote. And at that point, Pasadena won, and obviously Toast couldn't pick the owners that flipped, so or know which specifically which one flipped. So in that respect, you know, they did that, and now you have this situation where, how about this? I mean, in total confidence, Dean Spanos last Wednesday night tells the commissioner and who knows how, a couple of owners – that then tomorrow morning I'm announcing that we're moving to L.A., and somebody leaks it. I mean, someone leaks it to the media.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. So, like I said, the whole thing has been a debacle, and at the end of the day, when Oakland likely moves to Las Vegas, that'll be within the course of just about one calendar year, three teams will have moved. And so Don't sit there and say how much you care about the fans. And it's been pretty bizarre the way this whole thing has played out.
You think if the NFL had to do it again, they might let the Chargers and Raiders move in together and keep the Rams here, or do they have just exactly what they want?
That's a real good question. And maybe if they had to do it over again, it would be different. Who knows? You know, who knows? But, you know, Jerry Jones, obviously, you know, was able to steer this thing the way he wanted it. And he, by the way, had his own conflict of interest, you know, with his company that he owns, which is going to benefit by Kroenke having the stadium there and all that. And so, you know, I think probably at the end of the day, they ended up getting exactly what they wanted, and they figure in time it'll all play out. But you know, who knows? You know, who knows what the future holds? You know, this LA market, as we all know, is very unique in terms of supporting, you know, the NFL and all that. And now, guys, you know, they're going to have Sundays there where except for the times when they'll put one on Monday night or Thursday night or something like that, most of the time they're going to have TV on, you know, in local TV in LA where it's the Chargers and the Rams, and the fans there that want to watch some other game are going to be left out in the dark because they're not going to be able to get, you know, those games. So those TV ratings aren't going to be very good, just like they weren't very good this year. So it'll be interesting, like I said, to see the way that it all develops down the road.
Tower Balzer is our guest here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. He joins us on the appliance discounter phone lines. It came out of absolutely nowhere. The only reason I was aware of it is because somebody posted the link to the video of Boomer Esiason and Craig Carton talking about it. Craig Carton speaking almost like, don't believe me now, believe me later, regarding the New York Jets, the Bush family, and St. Louis. I have to say, I give it zero credence. But the way that he was speaking, it was, and then they brought it up again on Friday. This was Thursday. He brought it up again on Friday. I have no idea where this is coming from. What were your thoughts when you saw that, Howard?
I had exactly your thoughts, Tim. I mean, you know, it's one thing that perhaps there could be an interest of ownership, but to think that the NFL is going to approve a relocation of the Jets out of New York to come to St. Louis seems just a tad, you know, far-fetched, unless it's part of another plan that is going to do some other things. But I also can't – I mean, what else could it be? I mean, I can't imagine, even if the league at some point would consider expansion, I don't think they would – I don't think they want to put an expansion team in New York City or actually New Jersey, whichever way you want to look at it. So I don't know. It does seem far-fetched. But I guess in the scheme of things in this world, you always say, well, yeah, I guess you never know. But it doesn't seem very realistic that something like that would happen. And quite frankly, I don't know why they would. You know, we keep hearing this whole notion that, well, the NFL is not going to expand because the owners don't want to split the TV revenue another two pieces or whatever it might be. Well, if you really do the math, it doesn't reduce everybody's TV money all that much. It's pretty insignificant in the scheme of things of what it would be reduced compared to the franchise fee that you would get for that relocation, which, depending on the market, would be anywhere from $2 to $3 billion. So I don't know that it's never going to happen, but it probably wouldn't be for a long time. But yeah, on the original thing, I just don't see how that is realistic at all, that they would leave a market the size of New York with just one team.
Howard, you think,
especially real quick, when you consider the stadium and how much the Jets were invested, you know, financially in the stadium to get that built and all that aspect of it. So that's even more makes it that it's not very realistic.
You think all these franchises moving around and the ever escalating prices of everything, that eventually the NFL brand will be hurt? Or do you see anything at all slowing it down?
I don't know that it really will, you know, on the revenue aspect of it, because after this is all said and done, it's hard to, I don't know when we'll see it again. I mean, after all, before this round, there hadn't been anything that happened for a couple of decades. So I don't know that that will affect it. I do believe, though, that the way the NFL does business, and I think that, you know, a lot of people view it, you know, with a bit of criticism. And I think overall that hurts their brand, because it hurts, you know, there's some that say, boy, you know, how can this team do this? And especially with the markets that are directly affected. I mean, basically, you're talking about three cities that will have lost a team. That's 10%, close to 10% of the fan base in the entire league. So I think that could, you know, generally affect it. And it definitely affected TV ratings. I don't believe that there's any question about that, even though there weren't that many that talked about, you know, that aspect of it. So I think that does hurt. But the game itself, it is what it is. I'll be very interested to see the ratings from these games yesterday. Hasn't been great leading up to the weekend. There weren't very many good games the first six. But yesterday, obviously, two compelling, amazing games. So those numbers are probably going to be pretty darn strong. And so I think overall that there's still a lot of strength in this league, and that they'll continue being a cash cow because, hey, the networks just want to put this on. And the networks also know that year they get the Super Bowl, they're going to generate ridiculous numbers.
Hey, Howard, the ratings, I saw 28.2 for the Packers and Cowboys. They figured that one would be huge. If I'm not mistaken, I literally just saw this. Yeah, okay, 21.9 for the Steelers and Chiefs. That's the best primetime number for divisional round. And the Packers and Cowboys at 28.2 is the best divisional round number in 20 years.
Wow. So don't be surprised now. Don't be surprised if this doesn't become the way they do it on Sunday. I mean, because after all, they've done it this way on Saturdays now for a number of seasons,
right.
having it late afternoon and prime time. Don't be surprised now if they start doing this regularly on Sunday evening.
Yeah, when they announced that because of the weather, I thought this might wind up stumbling into what becomes the long-term play.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I don't think there's any doubt. You know, they feel they can get more ratings and it's revenue. That's what this league is totally about. You know, and consider, this is kind of a side story, but, you know, the Hall of Fame voting this year, you have the two contributors that were put up, Paul Tagliabue, the former commissioner, and, of course, Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, who have been basically emblematic of the race to revenue in the NFL. I mean, they both took over the same year, 1989, and since then, obviously, there were a lot of different things that were done for, and hey, we all understand it's a business, but I think sometimes if you start doing it solely for business instead of the game itself, then I think you can run into, you know, some issues. But as long as that revenue is rising, it's hard to stop that runaway freight train.
Hey, Howard, Jared Cook winds up being one of the heroes of the divisional round. He had been a go-to for Aaron Rodgers at times over the course of the year. He had had his drops with Aaron Rodgers over the course of the year. As a matter of fact, he had a drop on the play before the big catch on 3rd and 20. But without Aaron Rodgers being able to do what he's doing and has done with those plays where it's a broken play and he's on the run and is able to make a throw like that, Cook isn't in position, but you have to credit Jared Cook, things we never thought we'd be saying as we were on the threshold of a championship weekend, for making an incredible catch in a time where I at least was thinking to myself, okay, it's going to be overtime. It's over. Jared Cook makes, it, at this point, one of the catches of the year.
No doubt. Yeah, no question about it. And to hear Aaron Rodgers over this stretch of the season, Cook had some injuries earlier in the season, but has been healthy for the second half. And Aaron Rodgers has talked on frequent occasions about how important Cook has been overall to the offense, because while he hasn't had great overall numbers, his presence has opened things up for other receivers that are there, and that helps the overall offense. So, you know, there's no doubt now with what his career has been, which has been pretty inconsistent and spotty, this is a play that will be remembered for a long, long time, and pretty amazing what he was able to do on that play, and what Rodgers is able to do. That guy's just really, really crazy. The most amazing play, and it was talked about, of course, was on that sack.
Yes.
On first down, that boy, I mean, his hand must be made of steel or something. How? Because that he was basically holding the ball with his hand. It wasn't like it was tucked or anything like that. He just had it only in his hand, and to get hit the way he did from his blind side, to be able to hold on to it and not fumble was pretty unbelievable. That kept that drive alive, and we'll never know. Had he fumbled, who knows? Maybe the Cowboys get it, and they're in position to win the game with their own field goal.
Could have just run it in. I was stunned by that as well. I went back, and I was looking at that replay because I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it seemed like a foregone conclusion that with Heath's contact that ball was going to come loose, and Ty Montgomery got either a shoulder on him or just got his body in from just a bit. Obviously not enough to stop him, but just a bit, and perhaps it impeded the progress enough to cut down on the momentum from Heath, but that seemed like what was going to be a crystal clear shot and an inevitable fumble that would at the very least give Dallas a field goal opportunity, if not a loose ball pickup return for a defensive fumble recovery. And Aaron Rodgers, to his credit, not only makes two great throws on that drive, one Cook dropped, one he caught, but able to hold on to that football. An absolutely sick sequence. On the other side of the state, Kansas City, some there feeling like they were screwed by the holding call. Do you believe that was a hold on Fisher on the two-point conversion?
I think it was. I mean, he had, as we could see, and granted, you know, Harrison was slipping a little bit, but he had his hand around his neck, basically around high in his shoulders. I mean, that's a no-no. Now, I've heard some people say, well, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot worse that isn't called in the NFL. And Alex Smith said that. And I certainly tend to agree with that, is that we see it a lot of times as the great pass rushers, that sometimes I can remember times when the Rams were here and Robert Quinn would basically, I would joke sometimes that the opposing tackle of the team the Rams were playing led the game in tackles as opposed to defensive players because of how many times he was just brought down. But by the letter of the rule, the law and the rule, it was holding. And it obviously hurt the Chiefs at that point. But what was really interesting, you know, Twitter is such a funny place sometimes because during the Packers, I mean, boy, how many times were the Cowboys guilty of holding and just grabbing guys' jerseys to impede them, and it wasn't called? And some people were saying, well, you don't make those calls, you know, or even the pass interference call near the end of the game. Oh, you don't make that call and have that be the thing that decides it. Well, you know what? To my mind, a penalty is a penalty, and you can't overlook things and just not call them because that decides the game. Well, no, the call didn't decide the game. It was the guy committing the penalty that did it. And so it was unfortunate for the Chiefs that it played out like that, but there was a lot more reasons they lost that game, but that one's certainly front and center. But yeah, I definitely think that was holding.
Sets the stage for a classic conference championship weekend. Falcons and Packers, one last game at the Georgia Dome, and then the Patriots hosting the Steelers. And I really, you know, sometimes you go to conference championship weekend, I feel like, yeah, I mean, one of these four teams just, you know, I mean, certainly they have a chance, but it's really unlikely. I go into this one going, yeah, I could see any one of these four teams winning the Super Bowl.
No doubt. And whichever two come out of it, looks like it'll be quite a compelling matchup in the Super Bowl. And let's be honest, a big part of it is, you know, the old cliche, not the old cliche, but it's said so many times, what a quarterback league it is. And while you have to have all the other pieces on a team to be able to be successful, you have to have a lot of other pieces. If you don't have that quarterback, it's awfully difficult to win big games. And when you talk about Brady and Roethlisberger and Rodgers, and now, of course, Matt Ryan, who's probably going to be the league MVP this season, I mean, you're talking about four of the best that are in the game. In fact, I figured this stat out last night, and it's pretty ridiculous, actually, that these four guys combined, counting playoff games that they've played, have combined for over 200,000 passing yards in their careers, and three of them have more than 300 touchdown passes, and 529 victories combined, counting postseason in their careers. That's pretty crazy. And of course, Brady's at the top of the list. So, it's like you said, Tim. It should make for two tremendous games next Sunday. And once again, we'll go back to the ratings. It should be very interesting what they are. But boy, the quarterback. And I know quarterbacks aren't really the matchup, but that's what everybody will be talking about. And It should be a lot of fun to watch, and then the Super Bowl, whichever two are there.
Less than a minute left. The Rams make a coaching hire, both as a head coach with Sean McVay and Wade Phillips as the defensive coordinator. Your reaction?
I think the ability to get Phillips was as much the motivation to hire this guy as anything else. Not to say he doesn't have a good offensive pedigree, and everyone talks about how young he is. I don't know really how much that really matters if you can be a coach, but who knows? You know, the bottom line is any of these guys who are first-time head coaches, you never know how they're going to be when they get into that role. But getting Phillips was tremendous. Obviously, for McVay to be successful on offense, they need better players. And so that's going to be the biggest thing that they have to accomplish as they put this team together. So, but you know, it's interesting. Sean, you know, Kyle Shanahan's still sitting out there. You know, Josh McDaniel's still sitting out there. The 49ers don't have a head coach yet, but they're the only team. So I guess they can sit around and wait and feel okay with that. But you know, once again, it'll give us something to all wonder about with the Rams. And if it doesn't work, I guess we'll all be continue to be happy about it.
Schadenfreude right. Factory. Howard Balzer with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Thank you, Howard.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, thank you.
With us here on the radio program. Doug, he is 30 years old.
Yes, youngest coach since like the 1930s or something.
And that was?
Somebody that you'd never heard of. Hmm. But you go way back and like Hallis and Curly Lambeau were both like 22, 23 years old. And that counts, even obviously a totally different league.
Who do you think was hotter?
I don't know what either one of them. Well, I know what Papa Bear Hallis looked like right at the end, and he wasn't really hot. But, of course, he was about 90 years old. It's hard to be hot at 90.
What's your age cutoff for sleeping with a guy?
90.
Doug, we are now, we're approaching only 100 tickets left for the fight.
No. It's going to sell out, isn't it? Then there'll be a scalper's market.
You think there'll be a secondary market for a charity
yes.
fight?
I think we put a TV outside and let the people who can't get in
at
watch
Ballpark
from
Village.
Watch from the parking lot of the athletic club.
Yep. They're going quick. They're going quick. So if you want your tickets to Timber Fake and Ryan Kelly, presented by Bud Select, the battle on Broadway. Got to get your tickets now. There's a link for it on the TMA fan page. I tweeted out a link. Get them and get them quickly. And remember, the revenue is going to Three Little Birds for Life, Friends of Kids with Cancer and Catherine Cares. And the doors open at 7 on February 17th at South Broadway Athletic Club. And 5 amateur bouts beginning at 8. And then you'll have Timber Fake and Ryan Kelly getting in the squared circle. The strap's on the line.
Sure, I bet Ryan Kelly has his whole office out there. Front row, probably just screaming.
Yep.
They love him. They love them some Ryan Kelly, as we all do. He'll be the fan favorite, I'm sure.
He's the title sponsor of this show, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, he sure is. He's not just a heck of a middleweight scrapper. He's a heavyweight in the mortgage industry business.
It's a transition.
It's a reason the top realtors in town are working with Ryan Kelly. It's not because he's got a big right hand and an uppercut. It's because he's the home loan expert. The housing market is hot right now. Some houses sell the day they come on the market. It's never been more important to have a strong mortgage lender. If you're even considering buying a home, make sure to call Ryan and get pre-approved. He can do it on the same day you call in. Ryan Kelly and the Home Loan Expert team work hard so you don't have to. If you're looking to refinance or purchase a home, why would you go anywhere else? Call Ryan at 314-781-9700.
What?
314-781-9700 or visit thehomeloanexpert.com.
Ryan Kelly, title sponsor of the show. It's time for the Hot Shots Email of the Day. A Lemmings lunch is the prize for the Hot Shots Email of the Day. I wouldn't believe the far-fetched tale if it hadn't happened to me personally. As I left Hot Shots last Thursday, a LeBaron-shaped UFO sucked me up. Their leader had a cranium so big it made my Lithuanian forehead look like child's play. As he prodded and probed my body, he was spewing Bob Hamilton quotes. Not wanting to get graphic about the finale, let's just say I'm a little worried he got my butt pregnant. Comes from Injun Joe's Cave Ride Magic Man.
Injun Joe's Cave Ride Magic Man has been suspended for those comments. He's been suspended for those comments a period of 2 days' time, and his name now resides in the Llewellyn's Pub leather-bound suspension logule.
Hey, boys. Like most of us, the first thing I thought of this morning was you. I thought to myself, what can I do for Tim today? How can I serve him? I then plucked every last one of my hairs from my head, making sure I preserved the roots so you could have hair. Hopefully there's actually a procedure to make that happen. If not, well, I guess I'm bald now, but at least I tried.
All right, that's enough.
Hugs and kisses, that's from Wayne Gretzky's turtleneck.
Wayne Gretzky's turtleneck has just been added to the Thorough Lemmings list. Wayne Gretzky's turtleneck. Let me write that down here on the Thorough Lemmings list.
I'm going to keep reading while you write.
Okay.
Howdy, Doug, since you're hell-bent on shoving the NFL down our throats, here's your next story for Sports Sunday. The Jets are coming to St. Louis. They will, Doug, that's a sentence that was sent
okay.
in. They, we, be largely owned by Lambert Hooterville, who will change the team logo to the likeness of Arnold, the pig from Green Acres. New team colors will be brown on brown. If anyone complains, they'll prop up the son of a sports agent as COO to explain they can't change the uniforms because it takes 2.5 years.
5 in some cases.
That's from Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech.
Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech.
What a way to start a Monday. Douglas got out that cute little writing utensil, and for the first time in my TMA fandom, I have been added to the suspension logule. Hopefully Doug carries that book around in his back pocket so that my name is a little closer to that sweet rump. Or better case scenario, he uses the book to cover up the spontaneous blood flow that hits all of us up front as opposed to flipping it under the belt.
Okay, that's enough. Is that the Soulard Twink Boy?
No, it's from 901.
Oh. 901 has already previously been suspended a period of 2 days' time.
Hey, Tim, I was just emailing to prepare you for the next few hours of your life. My number one suggestion is to have the phrase, paste me, copied and ready to paste on both your phone and laptop. I'll just give you some scenarios on when it might be useful. Hey, Tim, $50 seems a little high. Can I get some sort of 2-for-1 thing? Come on, man. The other ticket's for my wife, who doesn't really even know about the show. How about both you and your wife taste me? Now, this next one is a sneaky example when you must be on your toes because this guy is going to publicly MF you on the fan page before sending a private message that goes something like this. Hey, Tim, I was really busy this morning and couldn't get tickets to the fight in time. Anything you can do? That is an example of a message right there.
Sure.
Do you have enough time to taste me? And let's try one more. Hey, Tim, remember when you said about a month ago the fight date was tentatively set for February 4th? Well, this is bullcrap because I can't make the 17th on account that it's Mardi Gras weekend. A nice little response here would be, yeah, because tentatively is Latin for set in stone. Taste me.
Oh.
Tell him good luck, Doug. That's from Matt, who bowls at Hank's.
Matt, who bowls at Hank's.
Buzz. Thanks. That's from Doug's vibrating plug.
That's awful. Who was it?
Doug's vibrating plug.
All right. He's been suspended. He's been suspended a period of 2 days' time. Hey. Thank you, Llewellyn.
And finally, guys, really looking forward to this battle on Broadway, and I'm excited for a lot of reasons. First off, so much mystery with Timberfake. Questions loft through the air like, does he have transportation to even get to the fight that day? And will the stitches and staples in his head from the unfortunate city beating he took a few weeks ago be out by then? Also, I can't help but constantly ponder how old he is. It's kind of like Carl Weathers, a.k.a. Apollo Creed. I look at him in that taut, shiny body, and I'm like, is he 51? Is he 68? Damn it, I don't know. Kind of the same with Timberfake. Is he 23? Is he 33? Is he 43? And just really on top of a skincare game. Any which way it unfolds, I'm really looking forward to the event. Lord knows I won't be there in my physical form, but God knows traces of my seed will be embedded in dozens of the outfits you'll see on display that night as a parade of my ex-lovers converges upon that smoky old bingo hall. Thanks, Misty Plops.
Misty Plops, Assistant Program Director.
Doug, that's what we have for the email of the day. Show me what you got, little mama.
Well, I was going to go with Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech until the last one. Misty Plops got me there. I'll go with Misty Plops.
I'm going to go with Matt, who bowls at Hank's. Plow Senator?
You know, I like the short and sweet ones. Like, Doug, the other day you had a New Year's Eve gerbil, that one I liked. I have to go with the vibrator one. So we have to go with Iggy because I like
Iggy,
that
even
one.
Though now we're in Frank's time. So make it quick.
Matt, who bowls at Hank's.
Yeah!
Dadnabbit, Lucas!
Control of Congress. Congratulations to Matt, who bowls at Hank's on your birthday. Happy birthday, Matt, who bowls at Hank's. You have won the Hot Shots email of the day. Frank is up next. It's the Lion's Choice Famous Roast Beef. Hand off to Frank Cusimano and the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Friendly reminder that Audio Express has all kinds of deals going on right now. Doug, Audio Express is the place to go with hands-free Bluetooth to any car stereo starting as low as $39. JVC's top-selling AM-FM CD with Bluetooth and matching speakers now just $159 installed. Power your entire system with kickers. 600-watt, 5-channel amp, clearance price $249. It's all at Audio Express. Get the top-name brands you want at prices you'll love during Audio Express's annual store-wide clearance sale. Clearance sale. Hurry in for the best selection. Time for us to shut it down for the Plow Senator, for Iggy, for the Seamaster, for my brother Kevin, for Douglas Elvin Vaughn, for Jimmy the Cat Hayes. I'm Tim McKernan. This has been the Ryan Kelly Morning After on the all-new 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HG2 FM, and inside STL.com live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios.